All right. Hey, good morning, everybody. My name is Brad, and that was Russell, world's best student pastor. Hands down. Yeah. So there are only 148 seats left. Alfie and I bought ours this morning, so don't miss out. It really is a great opportunity to help send some kids that might not otherwise go to camp to meet Jesus, not go to camp. You get the difference, right? And so encourage you to be part of that. All right, so last week we started a series that we've entitled Like Jesus. But don't misunderstand the title. It isn't like you really should like Jesus. No, it's actually this. We are able to increasingly think like Jesus so that in the end we are increasingly mistaken for him. And we increasingly actually become like him. That project will not be completed this side of eternity. But increasingly we can do that. So last week I pointed out a couple of you've got to be kidding kind of Bible passages. Like, really? That's actually what it says? Here's one of them. Who has known the mind of the Lord so as to instruct him? That's an Old Testament quote. And then the writer Paul says, but we have the mind of Christ. You've got to be kidding. Like, really, apparently, if he's right, we're able to increasingly think about family and money and time and the things of life like he does. Well, if you were here last week, you know that I repeatedly said, you've got to be kidding. And that was annoying to some people. So much so that someone bought a shirt. Right? You've got to be kidding. Yeah. But it is amazing, isn't it? I don't mean just the shirt or nor the body, but just the statement, right? So, okay, so last week was the wonder of how we can increasingly think like Jesus. Today, I would love to think through with you the idea that we can increasingly love like Jesus. Now, I know when I say that, that's just what Jesus people talk about. They talk about the love of God, right? In fact, if you think about what we hear in even our pop culture, when Jesus is kind of described in some way, he often isn't described as intelligent or as authoritative or powerful or something that he even exists. Some present him as mythical. But here's something that's consistently associated with him. It's legendary. And that's his love for people. Very seldom do you hear about a hateful Jesus. Like, that's part of it. Now, you may not know him. That may just be legend. Like, Superman has superpowers. Jesus' superpower is love. Totally miss what his love really is about. His love isn't some kind of romantic feeling or sentimentality or that kind of thing. It's far bigger and far better than that. And when you have been touched by his love, everything is different. In fact, the scriptures consistently, particularly through the New Testament, would point out if you've experienced the love of Christ personally, it so impacts you that the natural thing to do is to love other people similarly. And as your understanding of his love goes up and your ability to comprehend and embrace it and let yourself be loved, it has an effect on the ability to love people we might not otherwise love. His love is absolutely the most stunning thing. And I would like to, if you would join me in this, if not, you're just going to kind of sit there, but join me in this. I would like to take you to a quote from one of Jesus' close followers, the guy that self-identified as the one that Jesus loved. His name is John. And I think he might have, why did he do that, right? I think it might have been because he thought nobody could be loved more than he had been. And so I must be more loved than anybody could possibly be. Maybe, maybe not. But that's the backdrop, I think, for why he writes the way he writes. Okay, so let me take you to the quote. This is John 13. If you want to follow along in your Bible or click to it, you can do so. This is the last night before Jesus is arrested. In fact, it's only probably 3 hours or so before he's arrested. And he's gathered his group of 12 together, probably early in April, less than 2,000 years ago, in a rented room someplace outside the walls of the city of Jerusalem. Typical residential area, second floor of this building that they're in. And he gathers them together, and this is what happens. It says, just before the Passover meal. So the whole country, particularly the males of the country, three times a year would gather in Jerusalem for festivals. And they loved this festival because this was a festival that was taken from the Jewish occupation in Egypt, where God had intervened through Moses and freed them. This was a party. They loved the festival and the food and the music and reconnecting with friends. It was the most celebratory of all of the three feasts they would go to. And it's at that point that Jesus says, look, I know that the hour has come for him, for me, to leave this world and go to my Father. And Jesus, having loved his own who were in the world, now loved them to the end. The reason I underline that is that it's really easy to misunderstand that, to think, oh yeah, he loved them all the way till he died on the cross. Not what it says. It's not a time thing. It's a volume, it's a amount thing. So he loved them to the absolute limit of what anybody has ever been loved before. There's no love beyond that. This is the ultimate, the absolute end of what love is. And then he does an interesting thing that initially you look at it and go, okay, like, that's the most loving thing. It's a symbol of something that's about to happen. This is what he does. The evening meal was in progress, and they had a standard way that they did this. And the devil had already prompted Judas. Okay, so Judas, one of the 12, has decided to betray Jesus, and he's sitting around the table while this is going on. Don't think he's left the room. He's at the table while all this that is about to happen goes on. So Judas, who's the son of Simon, is going to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. And then partway through the meal, he gets up. He took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around them. Now he loved them to the end. Where is this going? Well, then he comes to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? And Jesus replied, you do not realize what I am doing. But later, Peter, I promise you, later you're going to understand this. Which Peter, brash Peter, says, you got to be kidding me. No, you shall never wash my feet. Like, you can't do that. And Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part of me. Got to pause for just a second. What's he saying? Peter, if you don't let me clean the dirt off your feet, you can't actually be one of my followers anymore. No, it's not what he's saying. Peter, when you understand what is happening right now in this moment, and you're able to embrace the love that's being shown to you, then you're going to be able to walk in the wonder of who I am. It's going to change you, Peter, if you understand this. And Peter doesn't understand it. Like, so often we don't understand the love that God has for us. But this is what Jesus is trying to point out. It says, then Simon Peter replied, not just my feet then, but let's get all wet. Let's just top to bottom. Like, let's have a bath here. To which Jesus answered, those who have had a bath need only wash their feet. There's something else going on here, Peter. Their whole body is clean and you're clean. Though not every one of you, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, Judas. For he knew who was going to betray him. He knows. He knows what Judas is thinking. He knows what he's done already at this point. And that is why he said, not everyone is clean. And then this, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I've done for you? And the answer was no. We don't understand what you've done. We think you've just washed our feet and that was all a little weird, a little odd. What's the deal? You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. See, oftentimes this passage is taken as this response. Isn't Jesus so humble to do that? It's not a humility passage. It's a love passage. He's not trying to demonstrate his humility by being Lord and King and washing people's feet. He's trying to point out, I'm Lord and King and I love you. And I'm doing something for you that's symbolic of where this is going. This is a passage about love. Sure, I am teacher and I am Lord. I'm the master teacher. I'm your rabbi. I've taught you things and shown you things that no one else has ever seen. I'm Lord. I have authority, all that. I'm not cashing that in. But here's what I want you to know. Now that I am your Lord and teacher and have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. Oh, I get it. This is about making sure at religious festivals and church gatherings, we wash each other's feet. That's what he's trying to point out, right? I grew up in a church where every year there was the annual Sunday night foot washing service. Any of you have experienced that? A few of you? Okay. Here's what I couldn't figure out as a kid. This whole thing was about humbly serving one another out of love for one another, washing each other's feet as a community, demonstrating submissive love to one another. And this, our church would gather every year to do that. And then Monday, we would gossip about each other. We would lie about each other. We would do all those other things. But we had done what Jesus wanted. No. There's something else going on here. And this is what's going on. He said, I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Well, what did you just do? Well, let's find out what Jesus does. This leads to a conversation about Judas being around the table, and Peter asks, he said, somebody's going to deny, who's that going to be? And Jesus gives a signal to Judas. Judas now leaves at this point. And then Jesus comes to this, and he makes this announcement to them a little later in this passage. He says, my children, my little ones, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I have told the Jews, so I tell you, where I'm going, you cannot come. Now, this should have come as no surprise to anybody. He had said this already two other times to this group and inferred it a number of other times. And so it's like Jesus just throws it out there again. Guys, hey, I just want to remind you of this, but this is really what I want to get to. Here's the foot washing thing. I want to explain it to you. This is what I want to tell you. I'm going to give you a new command. I'm giving you a new command, guys. Now, on the surface, we look at that and go, okay, it shouldn't have landed that way for them. They should have looked at this as good Jewish boys who grew up with the commandments. You know the commandments, right? There's how many of them? No, there's way more than that. So it starts with this, right? Moses goes to the top of a mountain, meets God. God gives him 10 commandments. The first is most important. Love the Lord your God with all your heart. And then there are 9 others. Get that one right. Do the other 9. And then over the course of 1,300 years, laws somehow give birth to new laws. There's a malignancy to lawmaking because we're trying to explain it or we're trying to close loopholes or whatever we're trying to do. The religious leaders of Jesus' day now add, between Moses and Jesus, add 613 other laws. So they all believed this as good Jewish boys, grew up in it. There was one that was most important, then there were 9 others, and then there were 613 others. Well, maybe there was one more about your neighbor, but we're not totally sure that was a law. It's kind of optional. You can love your neighbor as long as they're a fellow Jew and they behave the right way. So let's see, that's 10, 613, that's 623, maybe 624. Oh, you're giving us 625. That's what you're doing. Nope. The fact that he says it's a new one, that word, if you translate it, goes, I'm giving you something that's altogether different than, other than, and it trumps everything else up till now. So I'm taking away 623, maybe 624, and replacing it with 1. To which they all should have said, who do you think you are? God gives laws. God gave them to Moses. God gives them to our religious people. Who do you think you are, God? Yeah. I don't think that. I know that. And so I want you to get this command. But hold on, Jesus. You yourself were asked one day, which is the most important commandment? And you didn't just give one. You gave 2. And neither one of them look like that. Are you like doubling down on or doubling back on what you said? Here's what happens. One day, a religious lawyer who's a lawyer in the religious law, expert, comes to Jesus and says, what's the most important commandment of all of them? 623, maybe 624. What is it? And Jesus answers this way. He says, well, here, like, okay, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And everybody cheers. That's right. You got it. And then he says, well, that's the first and greatest commandment. And then there's a second, and it's like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Like I said, the Jewish people thought that was optional. You could love your neighbor as long as they were good, well-behaved Jewish people. But by now, Jesus has redefined what neighbor is, right? Remember the good Samaritan? He's redefined that. So what's he saying? What's it mean? And the second is like it. Here's how we typically read that. Here's the first one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And then the second one next to it, pretty important, but really not as important as that one, is love your neighbor as yourself. Wrong way to think about it. This is not about which is most important. It's about sequence. It's about what is, if this is true, then this must be true. If this is real, that has to be. They're tied together as one. I'll give you an example. What is this? How do you know? Because you've seen it before, because you trust me, right? What's inside? Okay, how do you know that? Because you've been there before, right? Here, I'll show you. You're absolutely right, by the way. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Love, like this is an orange. What comes out of an orange will always be. Go ahead, you can say it. It's not complicated. Orange juice. Okay, what has Jesus just said to them? Without going into a whole bunch of words, he said, I give you a new commandment. Here's what I want to understand. I want you to know that if you ever experience the love of Christ, if you ever understand the love that I have for you, if you ever get that fully, you're going to ooze orange juice. It's just going to come out of you. And the amount of orange juice that comes out of you is directly related to how much you embrace and know and live in my love. You live in my love just a little bit, and I'm just your buddy. Not much love comes out. But when you are saturated with the amazing truth of what I am about to do, guys around the table and the world forever, when you get that, when you see the level of love and what it means and how you can live in that and how I choose you and pick you and pursue you and I want to love you and I want you to be loved and I want you to live in that. When you get that and grow in that, you are going to, by necessity, love other people whom you don't even like and aren't like you. Do you know that you're going to be able to love that neighbor who irritates the living daylights out of you? Not because you choose to love them. You can do loving things and way to go, that's good. But what Jesus is saying, I want you to be captured. Understand, this is not romantic, sentimental, get everything that you want love. It's way bigger, way richer than that. But when you live in it, when you let yourself be loved, the natural outflow is you're going to love other people. You are. So what is the command? It's a new one. I've already said it. It's to love one another. Now, as I said, there were 623, maybe 26, 26, 24, something like that. Now, this can't go out of this room, okay? Close your ears at home, okay? If you give me 613 or 623 or 624, I'm just broken enough, I'm going to try to find loopholes in those because I can't do 623 or 24. I can't even remember them. And so I find a loophole around them and I find a way to not do that because some of those things that I'm told to do, I just don't want to do. They're hard for me. They cost me something. I have to deny my pleasure and myself. And oh, there's got to be a loophole here somehow. Like this for sure can't go out of the room. I can even take the Bible and I have at different points of my life and I've read certain things in it. And rather than look for the truth in it, I look for the loophole in it. I don't want to do that. Like love my enemy. Leave your gift at the altar if you know someone has against you right now. Like just leave it and go to them and be reconciled. Yeah, but they hurt me. Yeah, they did this to me. there's got to be a loophole. You mean like right now or like next month or when they come back first? Like what? Like a loophole. And what Jesus does brilliantly is he takes all of those laws, narrows it into one, and closes all of the loopholes. He says, here's the one command. I am fulfilling all 623. Simply do this. Love other people. Love one another. Yep, all those others are now, yep, do this one. This is the one. There's no loophole. It's brilliant. Okay, but what's the standard? How do I know? And again, Jesus is the smartest guy in the room, right? This is what he says. He says, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. There you go. Hey, Matthew, sitting around the table. Hey, Matthew. Remember when we first met? Yeah. What were you doing? I was collecting taxes off the backs of my fellow Jewish citizens to give to the Romans, and I was padding my pocket, lining it with some of the extra tax revenue. And Matthew, when I found you, what did I say to you? Well, you didn't point out that I was a tax collector and, you know, an embarrassment to my nation and my family, and you invited me into your circle of friends. And Matthew, remember that night? What did we do that night, that first night? Well, you came to my home to be with other delinquent tax collectors. And Matthew, I was so happy to be there. And when we gathered around, did I stand up in front of them and tell them how bad they were and how they were messing up the nation and how they were out of bounds with God? No, you didn't. So Matthew, they couldn't be any further like distant from who I am. They're not like me. But Matthew, like you weren't like me, I loved you. So for the rest of your life now, Matthew, for the rest of your life, you love other people like I loved you. That's your standard. That's what you do. Oh, Nathaniel, remember I overheard the conversation, right, where you were told that I was from Nazareth and you blurted out, well, there's nothing good that can come from Nazareth. What did I do, Nathaniel? Well, you didn't do anything. You didn't point it out. You didn't remind me. No. So, Nathaniel, the next time someone says something offensive to you, you love them the way I've just loved you for the rest of your life. Oh, and Judas, still sitting around the table. Judas, I love you, and I've kept you on this team all these years. I knew what you were going to do. I know what you've done. Judas, I know that you had your fingers in the till and you were taking stuff out and using it for yourself. I know all that. But Judas, you're still sitting around this table tonight because I hope that the love of Jesus, my love for you, the love that God has for you will break your hard heart, will infiltrate your world, and you'll back away from what's there. We'll find another way to get to the fulfill the prophecies about my life. But Judas, I've kept you around all this time because I've hoped that my love would penetrate your heart and your life so that you, Judas, you of all the 12 around here would be ambassador for love because you've been loved so much. So much. Oh, that was my hope for you. Because I wanted you to be loved and to be a lover. So love like you've been loved. That's the command that Jesus gives. Now, how do we do that? Because people really annoy us and they disappoint us and they lie to us and they deceive us and they hurt us and they do like, where do we get that from? Well, there's more to the conversation around that table than what I've shared now. If you go to John's account, like where we're in, and you go to chapter 15, 16, 17, that's a great thing to read this week. You're going to discover that Jesus comes back to this very same point. He makes it again in John chapter 15, verse 12, where he says, you know, love one another. But before that, he said, here's how you do this. He uses this idea of abiding in him. He uses this idea of like, I am the vine, you're the branches. If you stay connected to me, You're going to increasingly discover who I am. My mind is going to take over your mind. You're going to think increasingly like me. The love that I have for you is going to grow and build in your life. So stay with me. Abide with me. Develop this friendship. Spend time with me. Do the next moment of your life with me. Carve out time every day to spend with me, not just to read the Bible and not just to go through like stale prayers, but let's do a friendship together. Let's do a real vital connection. That's how we abide. That's what it means to stay together. But also, don't ever do this on your own. It's way too dangerous. You need people around you who can also love you like they've been loved. And you need to be able to love them like you've been loved. And they can encourage you and they can help you and they can carry your burdens and they can pray for you. And they can hold you accountable to things that you promise and things that you say you're going to do. And they can encourage you when love seems to have leaked away. Find a group of people. Do life with them. Last week I told you, and I want to share it again with you, we have a network of some 30 small groups that meet around our community. If you're not in that, okay. But what group is around you who loves you that way? What group do you have around you that you can love that way? Who cares for you and looks after you and challenges you? Where's the group? And if you don't have one, don't do this on your own. Check out one of our groups. We want to help with that if we can. Right after the service, you'll see some tables in the back. Go find out what groups are available. My guess is this. There might even be some of us around here who have led a small group like that before, and you're just waiting for the opportunity, waiting for some call from God. Go do it. This is your call. Check out what you can do and how you can be part of it. But we want to be this community of people that's a community of people who learn to love like we've been loved. Maybe more than anything you could do this week would be to list out the ways that Jesus has loved you. It's a long list. And as you list that out, watch what happens in your heart for other people. It's an amazing thing. Part of the meal that Jesus shares that night, we haven't talked about because John doesn't record it, but Matthew, Mark, and Luke record it, that it became like a love feast together. You might well know it as communion, where partway through the meal, Jesus takes a little bit of bread and he breaks it. He takes some wine, pours it out, and shares that cup. And he says this like amazing thing to these guys. If the foot washing wasn't like enough, he said, this is what the foot washing leads to. My body's going to be broken for you. It means I'm going to be treated horribly. And my blood is going to be spilled, and I'm going to give my life up for you. And so, guys, this is the first time someone's really celebrating this. But, you know, when you all go out into the world and you start these small communities of faith around the world, when you guys get together with people who have said yes to Jesus, you celebrate this. Because no greater love has anybody than to lay down their life for a friend. So we're going to share communion together. I hope that you have your communion because you can get it ready to go. I want to pray together, and we're going to sing the words of a song about the love of God. Just let that wash over you. And then I'm going to come back, and we'll share it together, and then we'll finish our morning together. So will you pray with me, Jesus? It turns out you're the smartest guy in the room. You know human nature better than we know ourselves. It turns out that you're also the most loving person in the room. Would you forgive us for passing that off, for minimizing it, or for redefining it as some kind of sentimental, feel good, give me what I want kind of love? But forgive us for being afraid of letting ourselves be loved by you. Would you forgive us for the way we remind ourselves of all the things we've done that are unloving and they're kind of rebellious or even in your face? And then we hold your love at a distance because we think we couldn't How could you reach me? Look at me. But that group of guys around the table who had their own story were given something that day by you. Something I think in the years ahead must have been so deeply meaningful for them as they gathered for what they end up calling their love feast with you. And they let your love reign over them and flow over them and wash them and encourage them. We want to celebrate that, but we first want to celebrate your love for us.